City Talk 105.9. Official podcasts. Online at citytalk.fm.
Talk to Trisha on City Talk 105.9.
Well, at the age of 40, George Williams seemed to have it all. He was a successful Liverpool businessman with a family, a smart house, a swimming pool and a Bentley parked outside. But inside, George was hiding from the world. Severely depressed and obsessive compulsive, he was 25 years into a chronic drink problem, downing 2 bottles of vodka a day and harbouring what he describes as a real desire to die. In 2003, and against the odds, he quit the booze and pledged not just to stay clean, but to help people without his advantages who might be grappling with an addiction. Well, last year, he set up an online TV station offering discussion and support and advice to addicts. The project's called In Excess, and George joins us now. George, welcome to City Talk.
Hi, Trish.
Hi. So tell us, when and why did you start using drink and drugs?
Well, I seem to be one of those people, Tricia, that just from the word go out of my teens, I just was foot to the floor. I think I'd had quite a poor... We had come from one of those very poor backgrounds, and I remember the first day of school, 5 years of age, looking around and realising, God, I'm really poor here, and people treat you differently. Even at school, the teachers and the headmistress, people just treated... I felt as though we were treated differently. Me and my family. And you know that sort of, those not very nice feelings that you have when you're young and growing up at a really impressionable age.
What, that you don't fit in, you mean?
That you don't fit in, that you know, you're one of the outsiders. My poor mother came from a really tough background, and my real father had been more than not a top bloke by any means.
No.
And I'd witnessed quite a lot. And I don't think it was for those reasons at first I thought I was having problems, but it was later on in life that I realised they played a much bigger part in all my defects of character, the problems and issues that I had, the bottle. So I made a commitment on the first day of school that I would leave on the first day of school and go into business, and I wanted to be rich and successful.
Right.
And every day when I went to school, that's all I thought about. I had no interest in school, I'll be perfectly honest with you, Tricia.
Did you not? No.
But I helped at home, looked after my brothers, tried to help my mother, dealt with all the responsibilities of what it was like, you know, being in a tough family.
Yeah.
And it was tough, and, you know, you get the bullying, you get the name-calling. But I was very, very focused. That's what I remember most of all.
You were going to climb out of that pit, if you like.
I was going to be victorious, not a victim.
Yeah.
And I think what happened, Tricia, by the time I'd left school and gone to college for a couple of years, all I ever wanted to do, as I say, was to get into business. And by 19... I was driving my first Jaguar, running my first business.
What business did you aim for then?
I started off, anything really, but I started off as a market trader, believe it or not.
Right.
Selling boys and menswear, and I was very, I would say, if you want the real truth, entrepreneurial.
Turn my hand to anything.
I just wanted to get a hold of something, an opportunity that came along. I wanted to grab it with both hands and go out into the big wide world and make it.
So at 19, you've got the Jag. Were you feeling pretty much the flash kid?
Oh, listen, and I know, you know, you look back and I cringe a bit now. You can giggle because you think, oh, no, it's so cringeworthy. But, you know, I just wanted to put 2 fingers up to the world and show them I'm going to be a somebody. But in some ways, that overwhelming desire and determination to make it had a big Achilles heel with it. And in all fairness, my drive was based on fear when I look back.
Yeah.
Scared of not being successful, scared of being financially insecure, scared of letting people know that inside, actually, I could be quite fragile. And being fragile on the inside meant on the outside that I was probably brash and, you know, overly confident and, as I say, very determined.
And were you scared of slipping back into the group labelled not accepted?
Oh, God, yeah. I think I'd suffer that most of my life, really. But I was a good person. I was always a good person. But, you know, I found myself in a pretty bad place already by 19. And my
when's the first time you, drink or drugs? Which came first?
Oh, no, drink was my poison, really.
Poison.
I mean, I've been and seen and done most things, but drink was always my big poison.
And what age did drinks come knocking at your door?
Well, at first, when did you start? It only came... I can tell you something, when I look back, you think that's a defining moment. That really makes a statement that's loud and clear. It wasn't that my drinking was anything unusual in my young teens. It was the same as everybody else's, really. A bottle of cider, a dry martini, if you remember, Tricia, back in those days.
God, yeah, baby sham.
Vermouth, I think it was, all of that.
Yeah.
But back then, it was the Saturday nights and trying to get somebody into the off-licence and those type of things.
Yeah, yeah.
But I do remember when I was at school and the sort of things that do shape and mould the rest of your life, I always hated that I was on free school dinners.
I hated
it, you know, Tricia. I really did. And you're singled out and you know what it can be like. And it was back in the 70s. And all the lads and all my friends, you know, would go out at lunchtime and buy their own lunches and takeaways and all the rest of it. And I had to stay in on my free dinners. But anyway, I went out one lunchtime and they'd been, I have to say, you know, like in lots of schools and growing up, the lads were out at lunchtime and they're off to one of the shops. It was an off licence and they were, you know, more than taking a few bars of chocolate and anything else they'd get their hands on.
Yeah.
And you feel, it's funny, really, because not being a bad lad, but thinking I wanted to be part of the group show people that, you know, I could handle myself, I could do this, I could do that.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went in, it's like I can remember it like it was yesterday. It was something that I still feel like it was in slow motion. And they all went in and they were coming out with bars of chocolate. And actually, I stood there and looked around and I thought, I can't believe they're taking bars of chocolate. And I picked up a Party 4. And you remember it was the big cans. It used to get Party 4s and I think it was 7s maybe.
Yeah, yeah.
And at lunchtime that day, we opened up a Party 4 and had a drink.
And you would have been kingpin for doing that.
Yeah.
Everybody else only took chocolate. Wow. Check out George. He took the beer.
Yeah, exactly, Tricia. And that feeling of popularity, it has a big impact on your life. We know that now. But then out of school and into business and buying the cars and the clothes and I love the champagne. I was on the champagne by the time I was 18. But by 19, driving the Jag and the champagne, I actually was also in my first AA meeting and, you know, you don't wake
really?
Up...
Really? Yeah. So you knew you had a problem by that stage?
Well, I knew at 19 that there was something seriously wrong with my drinking.
So how much were you drinking at 19 then?
Well, I was foot to the floor. I'd always been. I sort of had this magical figure of 2 bottles of vodka a day.
Oh, at 19?
At 19, and I had the money. I did have a big personality and I had lots of drive and, you know, I'd more than a couple of handfuls of people working for me. And I look back now and a side of me was really genuine about building a business and making something of my life. But another side of me was also wanting to show the world I was a somebody and I was not going to go back. You know, I was completely different from the life that I'd grown up with.
Yeah, I know what that feeling's like. I mean, when was the point? Can you remember the point? Because you're talking about 2 bottles of vodka at 19. And funnily enough, I've just had a guest on my chat show. Same age, 2 bottles of vodka a day. Female. But can you remember the day when you realised you had to have a drink outside the sociable times?
Oh, gosh.
Or did it just bleed out? You know, how does that happen?
Well, I've always been and I'll come to it a bit later explaining about the multi-addicted and compulsive obsessive and all the rest of it.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I wasn't one of those people that ever did anything by half. And in some ways, I'm still not. I just have to be very careful about where I apply my attentions and energy.
Where you channel your addictions,
But back then, you know, I was a young lad, 19, the world at my feet. But I think going to work one day and waiting for the off-licence to open at 9 o'clock in the morning, I think it was Victoria Wine back then, actually, and buying my first half bottle of vodka to put under the counter and start drinking with some orange juice, etc. You know, you're thinking, well, I just want to relax and I can do and I'm the boss. And you're obviously telling, it's the messages and stories that you're telling yourself inside, isn't it, the voice you're listening to, and you start justifying it. But, you know, a year or two later, I was, you know, I'd gone to an AA meeting at 19. I'd gone to 2 AA meetings at 19 because I was really confused. And I always felt that in one hand, Tricia, I had fantastic opportunities and I did have talent and I had ambition and I had all the tools in the box to really make something of myself in life. But actually, the opposite side of it, and in the other hand, was that I had feelings and emotions that I was having to suppress all of the time.
Like what? What sort of... feelings and emotions were you sitting on?
Well, I think in some ways it was, why did I want to self-destruct something that I would create? Why would I sabotage it?
What, with the drinking, you mean?
With the drinking, yeah. So I'd get to the eve throughout my life, most of my life, I could get to the eve of some amazing opportunities. I've never been short of opportunities and great moments in my life.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, I've sabotaged and self-destructed on so many of them.
Well, you were a prisoner of your own persona.
I mean, yes.
You wouldn't be, someone like George would not be allowed to fail. Even if you said, surely, I feel like rubbish, I feel awful. People, yeah, come on, have another drink, or come on, you know, because that's not who you are.
Yeah, it's not in my personality to have been like that back then. And the truth of the matter was, each time I was taking the Knox, you know, you're getting older and you're feeling it more and more. Mm. And, you know, I had so many fantastic opportunities just blown away because...
But did people not say anything, like family or friends or even, I don't know, lovers, partners? Did they not say
Do you know anything? What? I look back and in some ways, Tricia, somebody like me pushes people away and they try to get close to you. They try to help. You know, up until really only maybe 5 or 6 years ago, I couldn't really even do the physical contact in a loving and caring type of way.
What do you mean? No, I mean, what, kissing, cuddling?
Yeah, I was always never a cuddling type of person, Tricia. That was never my...
So what did you do in relationships? Treat and mean?
Well, I mean... That sounds a bit harsh, that, Tricia, to be honest with you.
No, come on, you were a bastard. Were you a bit of a bastard because if you're struggling in your own head, I don't mean that horribly. I mean, I'm talking from personal experience. Sometimes you're running so fast in your own head, fighting so many battles in your own head, you've got very little emotional energy to invest in any kind of relationship.
Well, I always had a spring in my step and it was never to stay. I was always the type of person that was going to get off.
Love them and leave them.
Well, something like that, Tricia, something like that.
Yeah.
And I mean, don't get me wrong, you know, I was a very sensitive bloke, believe it or not, but you would never have known that probably up until my late 30s.
You had to hide that.
I had to hide that, yeah, because I'll tell you something, if we come up to the more recent years, Tricia.
Yeah, yeah.
I'll tell you what I really found out about myself, and you only find these things out the hard way, really, and you have to go, you know, I talk about started a new journey a few years ago. But I think when I look back about my relationships with women.
Yeah.
And in all fairness, I would like to think that no one would ever really say anything too bad about me. But I think they all knew what I was like getting into relationships with me. I wasn't a bad person, but I was a bit of a swine to say the least. But I was cheeky, Tricia. I was cheeky. But I could pull that off as well, if you don't mind me saying.
But
in the latter years, I realised that one day it just sort of the penny dropped, because when I look back at how I'd never really allowed myself to bond with so many people, it was because, I suppose, my fear of being hurt. It comes back to fear again, Tricia.
Yeah.
And, you know, at 5 years of age, this boy, George, had made such big plans. And every day of my life, I just wanted to grow and run out of that life I'd come from. So I never really wanted to let people get too close, because deep down, in acting as though I was never going to get hurt, I look back now and see that actually I was going to get... If I really got hurt, what impact would that have upon my plans? And I'm not making excuses, but, you know, back then, when you're living that type of life, the clarity of your world... And the pace of my mind was a million miles an hour.
But what, when you were in prison, you had to stop drinking, though?
Oh, gosh, no, you must be drinking. Do you know what? Let me tell you about prison, Tricia. And this is the reality of it. And I was in there twice. And in no shape or form do I wish to glamorise it. But I'll tell you the truth about prison, Tricia.
Right.
I went into prison in 1993, dry. Yeah. I hadn't had a drink for 6 weeks. And 6 weeks into it, I was drinking a bottle of vodka a night again. And that's inside
What,
prison.
In a prison?
In prison, I was drinking a bottle of vodka a night. It was costing me £20.
So you could find booze.
Listen, it's as easy... it's easier in there than it is on the outside. I can assure you of that.
Oh, my gosh. But what was the pivotal moment which led to your recovery?
Well, I've had so many. In my life now, you know, I've had so many... What I will say, Tricia, is I spent 25 years of my life trying to recover.
Yeah.
And that takes its toll on someone. I can tell you that now.
Yeah,
I was out of the blocks very young.
Health-wise, you must have taken a battering.
Health-wise, by my late 30s, I was in a really, really bad place with my health. And again, you know, Tricia, you know, Big George trying to conceal it all. I couldn't even tell the doctors what was wrong with my body.
What was wrong with you?
I had a lot of liver. Things going on inside. You know, I wasn't, but you're not bothered about your liver really, but it was, you know, I had blood coming from everywhere and my insides were coming
up. Bleeding.
And yeah, and, you know, the wrenching was beyond wrenching by this stage and, you know, you're bringing so, you know, it wasn't a very nice place to be and, you know, I was always trying to conceal it. And I used to call it my vodka cough. And I had that for years. You always knew when I was back on the bottle because my vodka cough would come along and it'd be... and then the wrenching would start and, you know...
So what was the point where you were finally successful of giving up? Because you always say to people, don't give up giving up. But when did you turn... when and how did you turn a corner?
Well, going up to my 40s, I to be honest with you, the rock bottoms really came coming up to my 40s because... I was approaching 40 and thinking, you know, for over 20-odd years I've been trying to stop drinking and get my life in order. Mm-hmm. And to be honest with you, Trish, I was fading fast because I thought I can't do another 20 years of battling all these demons.
Right.
And you know yourself, once you give up on your spirit, you go downhill rapidly.
Yeah.
And I'd been a very strong guy and I was not so strong and I had all these side effects that were like Parkinson's and I was shaking rattling.
Yeah.
And not just shakes, but I mean really erratic convulsions and my face was twitching and, you know.
Did you pass out?
Oh, I've had all that, but 95% of my drinking career is in a blackout. I mean, I've woken up in foreign countries.
Are you kidding?
I didn't wake up in foreign beds. I woke up in foreign countries.
Where did you wake up?
Oh, listen, I've woken up bloody Amsterdam, Spain, Greece.
And you didn't know how you got there?
I can honestly tell you, I'd wake up and you think, God, you know, you recognise that you're in a strange room, but that was nothing unusual. And you're thinking, well, it's a bit warm, isn't it? And what's everybody, whose voice is that outside? And I can honestly tell you that, you know, the one that springs to mind most was waking up in Spain on one occasion and going down to the receptionist and thinking, Jesus Christ, I must be Spain, where am I? And going down and saying, where am I? And they're telling me the name of the hotel. I went, no, where am I? And I had a couple of £1,000 in cash in my pocket, a passport, the clothes I was in. And just remember Saturday night sitting on the settee was the last thing and it was sometime on
Sunday
morning.
And you come to in Spain?
And it shows you how you can live on autopilot, Trish. It just shows you the power of your subconscious, how it can take you from one country to another. And
scary.
You can't remember. It's very scary.
Scary.
But in the end, I tried to pack up for my 40th.
Yeah.
I'd ended up on that occasion virtually being hospital. I've got loads of funny stories, Tricia. It's very tragic,
right.
But always with lots of funny stories on the tail end of it. But I was a prisoner in my own home in the end. And my partner back then, she really, really, really went to the end of the line with me. We tried so hard, and I used to cold turkey. And I'll tell you something that's really important, Tricia, that people need to understand. You know, I'd started doing well for myself and my insurance policies, and I wouldn't go to the doctors for fear what would be put on my records.
Yeah.
And then, to be honest with you, I knew I was going to die. I was really convinced that my health.
You really
was gonna,
thought you were, yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
It was going to happen, and if I wasn't going to die, I think I was going to definitely finish myself off. I couldn't go on with it much longer.
Yeah.
And I was always cold turkeying at home, and I've cold turkeyed at least a dozen times, Tricia. And it's very violent, and what it does to... And cold turkeying has such a massive impact upon your body, the stresses and strains.
Yeah, yeah.
But I got beyond 40, and then I split with my ex-missus.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first couple of months I thought, you know...
Is this the lady... Did you have a daughter with this lady?
I did, yeah. I've got a beautiful 14-year-old girl.
So how did you balance your drinking with being a father?
Well, I think up until she was 10, I thought it... I mean, my ex-partner was fantastic in respect of, like, you know, once those dark periods came and the drinking was getting out of hand, I used to tend to spend more time out than in. I'd come home when my daughter was in bed. But in the latter years, I was becoming more and more housebound when I was drinking, Tricia.
Yeah.
Because physically, I was changing so much, and it really was killing me. It was killing me. And then I knew that I was a shadow of my former self, and trying to run the business and pop in for a couple of hours. But as quickly as I was in, I was sat on my hands and waiting to get out. But at 40, you know, as you announced at the beginning of the show, you know, I had all the toys, all the things that anybody would have strived to wish for in life. Tricia, I had it all, but I was a prisoner in my own home, couldn't step outside the door, didn't want people to see me. And I always remember on one occasion, I mean, they were trying to section me. The doctor was trying to section
me. God, yeah.
And I was pleading with the doctor, please don't section me. That'll be the thing that will finish me off. And people were coming around by this stage. And one day I just opened the door and started letting them in, Tricia.
And what, just strangers?
No. People who were close to me, but even the close people I wouldn't let get so close about my drinking.
Right.
And I let them in to see me, you know, the real George Williams.
Ah.
And they were... It was a very emotional period, really, because people were very shocked at how far I'd deteriorated, how open I'd become. And in some ways, deep down, I knew I was dying.
So was it rehab that did it, a final rehab?
No, not at all. I didn't have much to say about rehab. I thought my experience of rehab wasn't so good. I escaped from there, only did a night. I thought that was a bit of a rip-off, and it was like...
So what did it for you?
I'll tell you what rehab did for me. Rehab did get me off it, but not being there, because I swore to my ex-partner, I promise you I'll stop drinking if you don't put me in that place again. But what did it for me was, you know, having my daughter, I realised that the devastation of... either taking my own life or dying on such a young person. I knew people that had lost a member of the family when they were young.
So you'd seen the effects?
Yeah, the effects is devastating. It stays with them all their lives. And the big turning point, Tricia, was I decided that I couldn't find help. So I was going to create it, and I was going to use my experience.
So you treated yourself?
And I started, you know, I went on a journey. I started stripping all the layers. I let the boy inside me out, Tricia. That's what it's all about.
But did you get help to do that? Did you have psychotherapy or talking therapy?
Well, I tried it. To be honest with you, Tricia, I tried everything over 25 years. There wasn't much that I hadn't tried, if you want the real truth. And I had a lot of opinions.
So you probably accrued a lot of knowledge.
Well, I felt it. Yeah, I felt by the time I was 41 that I'd definitely lived it and not read it. And I had a lot of experience, I knew that, and I thought, well, maybe this experience must be worth something. And I thought, what's really important is that, firstly, I get myself well again, physically and mentally.
Yeah.
And then I want to step out and get on my soapbox. I had a lot to say, and I felt that by getting on my soapbox and stepping out and being open and honest and starting my journey... and doing this reprogramming to myself, Tricia. So you tried it out on yourself.
How long did it take, do you think, before you were... I suppose you'll never be completely free, but out of the immediate clutches of the monster. How long did that take? A year? 2 years?
Yeah, it took... The first year was just about really repairing myself. I used to go home every night, Tricia, from work, and literally just sit there trying to rethink it all through. And, you know, I was a clever bloke. I wasn't soft. And I had a lot of experience. A lot of mine was about being honest with myself within. And I just started this, you know, I call it my journey now. And I ended up, I'll tell you a funny story, Tricia, if you've still got time.
Yeah.
I ended up going, a friend of mine, I thought was doing a bit of hypnosis. And I thought, well, I'll go and do that. That'll be my little party piece, maybe. You know, I'll actually be able to do something, because I was a jack of all trades, I felt, and maybe master of none. I thought, well, I'll have a bit of that. That'll go down well at a social engagement on a Saturday night or two. And when I landed on the course, he started talking about hypnotherapy, and I went, hang on here a moment.
Ah.
I thought I was on a hypnosis course, and he went, no, you're on hypnotherapy.
So did you learn it?
So I learned it, I qualified.
Oh, brilliant.
And I took that whole hypnosis relaxation technique, and I shaped and moulded it into something new for myself, and I designed a piece of work called The Method, which is what I work on.
Yeah.
And... it's been amazing, Tricia. It's really been amazing. And listen, I still get tough days, but in creating the...
Because I was going to say, can you never drink now?
Oh, I'm never going to.
Can't do anything. We should come to the reason that you know, we so wanted to talk to you. And I just remind people I'm talking to George Williams. This is Talk to Tricia on City Talk 105.9. We're talking about the nature of addiction, but George is telling us about how his drinking, a very long struggle with drinking, and how he came out the other side of it using techniques that he'd learned along the way, including you just told us about hypnotherapy. And that brings us to XS TV. I had a look at it online.
What did you think, Tricia?
Amazing.
Oh, thank you.
Why, you know, the only thing I'd say is sad is that part of me thinks, why isn't this on TV?
Well,
TV rather than online.
Do you know what, Tricia? I really take that as a compliment for someone like yourself. I really do.
I mean it.
But we're only in the very early stages. You know, I only started the pilot series back in April.
Well, I could get you on my show, television show.
Oh, that'd be very nice, Tricia.
I'd love you to talk to other people because, you know, I've always, and we say right when I introduce the show, people who've been there, done it, got the T-shirt, washed the T-shirt several times, had it shrinked, you know, are always better at saying the pertinent thing and feeling the pertinent thing at the time. I mean, obsessions and obsessions, yes, and I absolutely know where you're coming from, obsessions. You need to look for something to obsess about or get involved in that's a positive thing.
Well, I didn't
and
want to be...
Is that XS TV for you?
Yeah, well, my whole In Excess campaign, really. And I'll tell you what was the real motivation for me. One, I knew that I was going to have to attach and bolt myself onto something that I was passionate about, Tricia, because I had tried
so
many things.
Your energy has to go somewhere.
It has to go somewhere, and what's going to get you out of bed in the morning is something, you know, on the days that you maybe want to pull the cover over your heads, what gets you out of bed is something that you're passionate about. So I was passionate about my own recovery, but what really, really, really struck a chord with me over the years was that there was I, George Williams, never short of something to say, brimming with confidence, could pick up the phone, could talk to anyone, could get in anywhere. I had all these amazing abilities and talents. Could open my own checkbook and sign myself into any rehab in the country.
Yeah.
And you know what, Tricia? In some ways, I felt that people still didn't understand so much about the problems and issues that people and I went through. And I thought, if someone like me could do all of those things and still struggle to get well, what happens to the people that have nothing, that are not so confident and don't have checkbooks and don't have confidence to pick up the phone? And to be honest with you, Tricia, I thought, you know, there's millions of people out there. And, you know, life in the 21st century is not just about drinking drugs anymore. Life in the 21st century is a very demanding place for most people. And everybody knows somebody with a drink or drugs or mental health problem or issue nowadays, Tricia.
Because looking at your In Excess TV online, you cover mental health problems and what they are, and it goes a long way to breaking down stigma and what have you. So I'm just going to tell people, if you type In Excess TV, do have a look at it. Well, one thing I was going to say to you, George, that you really should do the Mental Health Media Awards. I really think you should put your In Excess TV in for the Mental Health Media Awards. I've been involved with them before.
Tricia, do you know what I'd love? Because I love it when it comes from a third party. If you put pen to paper and say, get onto this guy, George Williams, you might find some of the answers you've been looking for. If you put it on a piece of paper...
We'll say that on air.
They'll listen to you, Tricia, more than they'll listen to me.
No, but what I'm saying is that, George, applying for something like the Mental Health Media Award, because there's some valuable information on there, as you say, about drink, drugs and all sorts of mental health problems.
Well, it's about the people, Tricia. Real people with real lives dealing with real issues.
Yeah,
and we're not exploiting them. You know, we don't need car crash TV. This is about, you know yourself, this, you know, people go on Big Brother. And in all fairness, Tricia, they've never had any life. That's why they make fools of themselves.
You know, the people
that you have as your guest and the people I have as mine, these are real people with amazing stories. And what we're looking for is not just to be stuck in the gritty issues, but the success stories of how people are making the way.
And the journey.
And the journeys. And the successes. And, you know, it's not one glove fits all. Many different people use many different ways, and I've got my way that I'm using, but I meet so many, you know what, Tricia, like yourself, I meet amazing people that really inspire me, and I'm in the thick of talking about, you know, I don't go home to my new partner now and I'm talking about my problems and issues every day. I meet lots of people to keep it all fresh.
Yes.
And it's a really exciting place for me to be. And I can honestly say, hand on heart, of course I get days, Trish, where I feel like, you know, doing the right instead of the left and thinking, what would it be like to have a cheeky vodka? But, you know, when I spent most of my life doing it, you know, I try to say to people, don't be so hard on ourselves that we get these thoughts. You know, they're ingrained into our subconscious and they take a long time to
change. So let's just remind people, In Excess TV, if you want some further information, and there are, you can, you know, get involved and you find your way. It's a very easy website to find your way around, and you can actually see the broadcasts. And as you've heard from George, he's talking to real people with real stories. And George, it has been truly, truly, truly fascinating talking to you. I hope a lot of our listeners get that message, not to give up giving up and keep trying and hang on in there. And also, what a powerful thing experience is in helping other people. And that's something you've really put across today.
Ah, Trish, I'm really over the moon that you've had me on the show. And so if we just say one thing, I've got so many people to thank in my life, Trisha, because you know what? Past and present, people didn't give up on me. And even I'll get a bit sensitive at that. People didn't give up on me. Yeah.
All right.
And I think that's because they always saw me trying, maybe. They saw the good in me. And I think a lot of good people just end up in a really bad place, Trisha.
All right. Well, thank you so much, George. You're listening to City Talk 105.9, the voice of Liverpool.
Listen, and log on to the voice of Liverpool. City Talk 105.9.